DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
This week on Living Planet, we look at what the book industry is doing to make itself greener at the world's biggest book fair in Frankfurt.
It's important to think about what a book in the future can look like. A book in the future can be fully ecological. It can be a respectful interaction with resources. I think this is a big opportunity.
We stop in at an environmentally friendly house competition in Madrid, which sees the best scientists from around the world up against each other.
We have also wetlands, which treats the water, the grey water that comes from the kitchen and bathroom. Then it just pumps the water to a wetland, which has macrophytes, which helps also to absorb the resin of the organic particles.
And we look at the role that fracking is playing in the US elections.
I think there's certainly plenty of room for regulators to improve the regulatory procedure, but there has not been a cataclysmic failure that I'm aware of involving fracking.
Hello and welcome to Living Planet with me, Andre Leslie, this week filling in for Saroja Kawila. This week, I, like many other journalists here in Germany, spent some time at the Frankfurt Book Fair. It's the biggest book fair in the world, and it's amazing just how many printed books are on site. Over 600,000 new titles are there each year, some estimates say. But what about saving trees? What about reducing paper book production with e-book readers and other digital devices? Well, it's not so easy. There are concerns about the ecological footprint of electronic readers and iPads, of course, not to mention the electric and server power they consume when being used. My colleague, Louisa Schaefer, also a regular at the fair, has more on the issue.
In Hall 3 at the Frankfurt Book Fair, the air is buzzing. People are everywhere, and they're flipping through novels, autobiographies, coffee table books, and calendars. Basically, anything that can be printed and given a glossy cover is here. Wolfgang Michael Hanke, the environment expert at publishing giant Random House, has been looking at this issue for years. He says that, at the moment, his company is focusing on improving the eco-friendliness of paper books rather than relying on a digital future.
There are so many factors that play a role here. Trying to say that e-readers are more or less friendly than normal books is hard to do. I don't want to make a prediction. There will be studies that come out, but first, when we can see how people use the devices and for how long.
Random House was one of the first companies to use FSC paper, certified environmentally friendly paper that is either partially recycled or comes from replanted forests. During these times of economic stress, not every big publisher makes an effort to use the right paper. But the trend is promising, Hanke says.
The best thing is, if you improve productivity by saving on resources, then you can even save some money for your company. And that is something that keeps our sales department happy.
In the difficult economic climate in Europe at the moment, printing companies are now forced to match the environmental demands of publishers or face missing out on contracts. Reinhard Herrock of the Austrian media company Gugler said his print technicians have worked out a way to print on 100% compostable paper. Saving money by using cheap, environmentally damaging paper is the completely wrong approach, he says.
This attitude is probably what led us into this crisis that we are currently experiencing. Barely any resources in the world, ecological problems all around the globe, an economic situation that's unstable. I think that this is really a warning to us that business in the future needs to function differently. Actually, it must function differently.
But what about the e-book business? Over at the stand of German electronics manufacturer Trextor, youngsters are playing with the fluorescent pink and purple e-readers that are on display. CEO Simon Schmiegel is convinced that the environmental impact of producing e-books is minor and saves on CO2 emissions.
Digital Datei wird ja am PC geschrieben.
A digital file is written by the author on a computer. Then it is transferred into the right formats, and so you don't need any paper.
Da braucht man kein Papier.
Still, book fair visitors trying out the products don't buy e-readers for the environmental benefits, it seems. Practicality is everything.
I have everything with me. There is mobility there. Secondly, there is great access. If I want to buy a book late on Sunday evening, I just do it and download it onto the e-reader.
If you like to read a lot, then it makes sense, because books can get heavy. You can take a lot of books with you with this thing.
For Reinhard Herrock of Googler Printing, it's an exciting time for the book industry. He's convinced the future lies with making traditional printed books simply more environmentally friendly.
It's important to think about what a book in the future can look like. A book in the future can be fully ecological. It can be a respectful interaction with resources. I think this is a big opportunity.
By the way, when it comes to what people here prefer reading, electronic or printed, the good old book was the clear winner. It seems to make sense, then, that that is where publishers and printers are focusing their environmental efforts on for the future.
Louisa Schaefer there at the Frankfurt Book Fair. Now it's time for a look at the environment headlines with Daniela Cheslow.
Environmentalists have declared 400 plants and animals under threat of extinction. The International Union for Conservation of Nature, or the IUCN, has released its study at the UN Convention of Biological Diversity held in Hyderabad, India. A cockroach and a tiny snail were declared extinct at the conference. According to the IUCN, a quarter of the world's mammals and 41% of amphibians are at risk of extinction. The conference comes 2 years after UN countries approved a plan in Japan to reverse declines in biodiversity. Experts say that meeting the plan's goals will cost between 115 billion euros and 330 billion euros, but current conservation spending is a mere fraction of this amount. 10 years after one of Europe's worst oil spills, a Spanish court has opened a trial of four defendants. In November 2002, a storm blew a hole in the Prestige oil tanker off the northwest coast of Spain. The ship cracked in two and sank, leaking 77,000 metric tons of fuel into the Atlantic. The spill polluted thousands of miles of coastline in Spain, Portugal, and France. Fishermen who helped clean the waters suffered genetic and lung problems. The ship's captain and three other defendants are now standing trial. Greek captain Apostolos Mangouras could face up to 12 years in jail. Critics say government officials must also come before the judge for their negligence. The trial will likely last until May 2013. And in South Africa, poachers have killed a record number of rhinos this year. According to a report released by the country's environment ministry, 455 rhinos have died so far at the hands of poachers in 2012. This is already higher than the number killed in all of last year. South Africa is home to more than 20,000 rhinos, and that represents about 90% of all the rhinos in Africa. Poaching has exploded in South Africa recently, increasing more than 30-fold since a decade ago. It is mainly driven by rising demand for rhino horn powder among the wealthy in China, Vietnam, and Thailand. The French city of Strasbourg is holding a fuel cell electric vehicle expo in late October. Car manufacturers Daimler, Honda, Toyota, and Opel are among the organizers of Drive and Ride, now in its fifth year. The expo is aimed at European lawmakers and consumers and hosted by the European Parliament's Transport and Tourism Committee. Auto manufacturers hope to increase the use of fuel cells in cars as a part of the EU's plans to reduce emissions. This year's conference will also feature a hydrogen refueling station. Drive and Ride takes place on Tuesday, October 23rd, and Wednesday, October 24th. India's Supreme Court has lifted a ban on tiger tourism. The move comes 3 months after India stopped foreigners from visiting tiger breeding grounds. The ban was meant to protect the tigers from habitat destruction and poaching. The Supreme Court has now ruled that tourists can visit 20% of the areas in the 41 Indian tiger sanctuaries. India is home to the world's largest population of wild tigers, today numbering 1,706. But this is only a tiny part of the 40,000 tigers counted in India last century.
Daniela Cheslow there with the Environment News. A house for two people who cook, wash and throw parties, powered only by the sun? Does it sound possible? Well, it is. At the second Solar Decathlon Europe in Madrid, 18 universities took part in a competition for the most energy-efficient living space. Architecture, energy efficiency, room comfort, market potential and sustainability. The participants were judged on 10 individual disciplines. Besides the European teams, competitors from China, Japan and Brazil were on hand to create the most energy-efficient house. From Germany, the universities of Konstanz and the RWTH Aachen were also there. Matilda Jordanova-Duda took a look for us in Madrid. The report is read by Connor Dillon.
Björn Trontrion selects music on a touchscreen tabletop. The table's surface is like a computer screen or an iPad surface. He makes his selection.
Mit der Musiksteuerung kann ich jetzt halt auch den nächsten Song hier auswählen. Ja.
I can choose the next song with these controls. I can turn the volume up or down. We have an AirPlay system in this house, which is from Apple, so I can broadcast on all the speakers in the house.
In fact, everything in this house, the lights, the temperature, the shutters on the windows, it's all centrally controlled. Björn helped design this house. He's a young architect from the RWTH, a university in the German city of Aachen. And this innovative solar home is his team's entry into the second Solar Decathlon Europe, a competition where young designers try to meet the challenges of resource shortage in the 21st century. Solar energy is used to perform even the most mundane household tasks. An app tracks the amount of energy gathered by the solar panels on the roof. This way, you can figure out if you've got enough power to do a load of laundry. The challengers in this competition get points for making energy available when it is needed. That's tricky, because it's very difficult to match changing weather patterns with the energy needs of people living in the house. The judges check in on the energy balance of each house every 3 minutes. Visitors lightly tap their fingers on the odd see-through walls in the Aachen house. They're made of CDs, with the silver enamel scraped off. The discs were layered atop one another like shingles and then baked in the oven. A lot of things are recycled here. The floor is made out of pieces of wood from a stadium that was recently demolished. To add a touch of ambiance, the light shades have been crafted from old sketch paper the architects used while designing the house. The designers are quite proud of their achievements. They've hung little signs around the house which tell visitors how much energy each element saves in comparison to most houses built in Germany today. A member of the team, Pia Alfacorta, hopes this will inspire new thinking in architecture.
Most people are surprised at the high levels of architectural or design quality someone can achieve using recycled products. It's becoming more accepted, and eventually people may even imitate what we're doing here.
The Germans are facing some tough challengers in this competition. The Brazilian team has been creative with its design and energy sourcing. Bamboo stalks have been installed on the veranda of the Brazilian Eco House. This shades the house from the sun, which, in a place like Brazil, is important on very hot days. Humberto Violato from the University of Sao Paulo is a member of the Brazilian team. He explains that they were inspired by the building techniques of the Tupi-Guarani, one of the largest indigenous groups in Brazil. They wanted to build a house that could tolerate conditions within a rainforest, while also generating its own energy. There are plants all over this house, but Violato says they aren't just decorative.
We have also wetlands, which treats the water, the gray water that comes from the kitchen and bathroom. Then it just pumps the water to a wetland, which has macrophytes, which helps also to absorb the resin of the organic particles. And we have also on the south facade a drain, rainwater drain, that takes this water also to the wetlands. Yeah, actually, this is going back to the roots. The generation before our grandpas and grandmas who used to treat the rest, the garbage, and we have forgotten.
But the real winners at the competition were the competitors from France. A team of young architects from the city of Grenoble have a vision for modern cities. Urban dwellers can live in one of their nano towers. They're up to 10 stories high. Each floor is a separate apartment. They haven't reconstructed an entire nano tower here at Madrid Solar Village, but they did build a model of the top two floors. Benjamin Lenoir invites us in and gives us a tour.
Voilà, on a pris l'ascenseur, on est arrivé au 8e étage.
This way, please. So we'll just take the elevator to the 8th floor.
The walls in the room are made of clay. Towels are dried off using the warmth of a refrigerator. A winter garden with a mobile kitchen. This is the highlight of the tour. It's intended to be a collective meeting point for all the residents of the building. The French team has built their vision for the future on a concept of community, where we work together to harvest, distribute, and preserve energy.
Thanks to these intelligent control systems, the production and use of energy can end up creating a positive balance, not just for one house, but for an entire area of a city.
The French team took home top prize, followed by teams from Spain, Italy, and Germany.
Thank you to Matilda Jordanova Duda for that piece. The English version was read by Connor Dillon. Oh, remember me, remember love, remember China, stay together my time. Well, you took it all, you tried to see, you tried to bring yourself up without involving me. Moving on to Africa now, Sierra Leone, in fact, where local fishermen are starting to become very angry about fly-by-night fishing crews. An investigation by the UK-based charity Environmental Justice Foundation has recently found evidence of illegally caught fish entering the European market from the area. The organisation says 9 out of 10 trawlers caught fishing illegally in Sierra Leone are accredited to export their catch to Europe. It claims Western Africa has the highest levels of illegal fishing in the world. It also found evidence of bribery, attacks on local fishermen, and trawlers fleeing to neighbouring countries to avoid fines. The organisation is calling for vessels to be blacklisted and wants the EU to strengthen regulations to stop illegal fish entering Europe. Tamison Ford has this report from Sierra Leone.
Oh, fish business.
Fishermen at Goderidge, a small fishing town on the outskirts of Freetown, the capital, are bringing in the night's catch. Some are not so lucky. The talk is of the trawlers, far out at sea, ruining their livelihoods. Siaka Sware looks out at his empty wooden boat.
Oh, the problem are many, so many problems. One, we are disturbing by the bigger boats, the trawlers. The fish that we are supposed to catch, they are catching all the fish and dumping them at the sea. So we find it difficult. Sometimes people go maybe 1, 2, 3 days, no catch.
In 18 months, the Environmental Justice Foundation received 252 reports from local communities of pirate fishing along the coast. Out of 10 trawlers it filmed fishing illegally, 9 were accredited to export their catch to Europe. It found evidence of vessels fishing inside exclusion zones, attacking local fishers and using banned fishing equipment. Sware says his brother lost a fisherman at sea last year when a trawler hit his boat. It was at night. It didn't stop, leaving the man to drown.
Our wives, our children, everybody will be suffering. I know without fishing, we cannot be able to pay school fees for our children or cannot be able to take care of our family, you know?
Sierra Leone loses $30 million every year through illegal fishing. For a country trying to rebuild itself after more than a decade of civil war, it's crushing for the economy. Dr. Soko Kabia, the Minister of Fisheries and Marine Resources, says tackling pirate fishing is their top priority.
They should also be made to face the consequences of the action. And I think it's easier when you have regional collaboration. And then the world would go out that West Africa is not the type of place that you can do that kind of business. We're doing it in the interest of our people. We have an obligation, particularly in countries such as ours, where we depend on every single resource that we can get.
The minister has been working closely with the Environmental Justice Foundation and other partners. He says things are improving slowly. They have already collected more than $1 million in fines over the last 18 months. Last year, the West Africa Regional Fisheries Project, supported by the World Bank, began its work to combat illegal fishing. Dr. Salio Sanko is the National Project Coordinator in Sierra Leone.
To give you an example of what we did recently is that the government of Liberia had a vessel that escaped prosecution there, and they had contacted our minister here in Sierra Leone if we could assist in arresting this vessel. And we were able to arrest it and send it back to Liberia, which is, to Ross, a very big feather on our cap.
The communities here at Goderich say they have noticed fewer trawlers, but they're still coming at night with their lights off when nobody except the fishermen can see them. And now many, like Sware, are doing everything they can to stop their children from becoming fishermen too.
Actually, this type of fishing, no. I don't want her to follow me this type of fishing.
Why not?
Because it's a very hard life, you know. It's a big, big hard life. I'm suffering so much here. Even to get my living for the day is a hard thing for me, so I don't want my children to follow me. That's why I'm preferring myself to so far than I will put them to school. Maybe after school they will be able to get a better job than me.
The Environmental Justice Foundation says more needs to be done to help West African coastal states reinforce their own security systems so more of these arrests can be made. It's calling for the EU to strengthen regulations as well as penalties for illegal fishing.
Tamison Ford there, reporting from Sierra Leone. Well, fracking has become a common word bouncing around in the world's media over the last few months. It's actually the nickname for the process of hydraulic fracturing, a unique way of obtaining natural gas or other raw materials from deep below the Earth's surface. It's an industry that is projected to give the United States natural gas for roughly 100 years, but environmentalists warn that the practice could contaminate drinking water supplies, thereby endangering human health. Needless to say, fracking is just one of the hot potatoes being tossed around in the current presidential race. Zoe Sullivan has more.
As the US presidential elections approach, environmental issues are low on the candidates' agendas. But one issue that's gained national attention is fracking, or hydraulic fracturing.
We have a supply of natural gas that can last America nearly 100 years.
US President Barack Obama made this statement during his State of the Union speech at the start of this year. He was talking about fracking, the pumping of water and chemicals into rock at high pressure in order to extract gas.
And my administration will take every possible action to safely develop this energy. The experts believe this will support more than 600,000 jobs by the end of the decade. And I'm requiring all companies that drill for gas on public lands to disclose the chemicals they use. Because America will develop this resource without putting the health and safety of our citizens at risk.
Obama was trying to reassure those concerned about the impact of fracking on the environment and people's health. His statement only mentioned publicly owned land, such as parks. It didn't cover fracking on land owned by individuals or companies, but the decision to allow drilling or to sell land for drilling has created controversies in some communities. In some parts of the country, landowners have earned a substantial amount by allowing drilling on their property. In other areas, neighbors of fracking sites report serious issues. Their water and soil, they say, contain pollutants from leaky pits and other industry-related sources. Moreover, Scientific American magazine has reported that pumping wastewater from fracking back into the ground can cause earthquakes. Shannon Dosmagen runs the Public Laboratory for Open Technology and Science. Her organization develops low-cost monitoring tools that ordinary citizens can use to check what's happening with water, air, and soil in their neighborhoods. I accompanied Dosmagen during a test of a new tool. We placed tubes filled with a substance sensitive to hydrogen sulfide in a marsh. If the tool works, the public laboratory will make it available for people who want to monitor fracking or gas patch sites.
This test has been done at volcanoes to test and see if there's hydrogen sulfide present. And so what we're doing is we're trying to modify it, and we're testing it in the marsh area here, but we'd like to eventually use it at gas patch sites as kind of a detection of hydrogen sulfide that's leaking from wells.
The idea for the new tool is that citizens can capture samples that indicate how much hydrogen sulfide the air contains. With this information, they can hold companies accountable if they're violating air quality standards. Currently, most companies are refusing to release information about the chemicals they use in the fracking process to the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA. Advocates say this makes it difficult to identify where contaminants in the water supply originate. Environmental and community advocates point to the potential for contaminated water supplies and soil as some of the serious risks associated with fracking, but the resource's potential is undeniable. Eric Smith heads up the Energy Institute at Tulane University's Business School in New Orleans. He explains a little about why fracking has grown so quickly.
It's gone from unmeasurable to about a third of our gas supply in about 10 years. So I would say it's a pretty significant source. It's likely to continue to increase. I think there's certainly plenty of room for regulators to improve the regulatory procedure, but there has not been a cataclysmic failure that I'm aware of involving fracking.
Smith says that the safety and demand issues surrounding the U.S.'s energy supply are complex. As a result, it's hard to fit them into the soundbites associated with presidential politics. This, Smith says, limits public discussion and makes it more difficult to find workable policy solutions.
The real question about shale is, what direction do you want the country to go? We can regress into some sort of proto-Stone Age population where we could support maybe a third of the people that live in the United States today, but everybody would have organically grown food. Or we can go into a regime where we have 300 million odd people in the country, and those people eat better, live better, have longer lives, and all of the good things that come with abundant energy supplies.
Some environmentalists agree with Smith that natural gas can play a role in moving the United States towards a cleaner energy system. Geologist Barry Cole told DW that natural gas can replace coal in power plants, reducing greenhouse emissions. He points out, though, that some problems with the practice are very real.
The earth can be cracked and faulted so that fluids can migrate vertically through even impermeable rock. If it's fractured or if it has a normal faulting where there is a crack going through the formations. And it can move under high pressure through these cracks and into shallow water or shallow formations, which may be producing potable water or drinking water for a community.
Cole says he believes Romney would roll back regulations on the fracking industry, acknowledging that the Obama administration will continue the practice, but with somewhat greater oversight. In Pennsylvania, some families have reported water contaminated with methane resulting from nearby fracking. But the Wall Street Journal reported in April that the EPA has dropped contamination charges in one Texas case and confirmed a Pennsylvania analysis that once contaminated wells are now safe.
Zoe Sullivan there, reporting from the U.S. on the controversial issue of fracking. Well, we are already at the end of this week's show, sadly, but we'll be back next week with more news and stories about environmental issues from Germany and around the world. Until then, you can find us online at www.dw.de/environment, or feel free to get in contact with us at DW_eco on Twitter and tell us what you think of the show. I'm Andre Leslie. This has been Living Planet. See you next week. Together we saw